Hey everybody, Scott McNulty here. There's still time to submit your questions for our 100th episode, Bonanza, assuming you're listening to this before the 100th episode has been posted. Post your question to Twitter with hashtag RandomQ and upload an audio comment or question to the link that is in the show notes. And now enjoy this episode. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Stuart Wellington. Stuart, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
So, Stuart, I think some people may be familiar with your work, but tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Sure, I'm Stuart Wellington. I am one of the three co-hosts of the Flophouse podcast. It's a comedy podcast that happens to be about movies. Bad movies, usually. And I'm a bartender, so that's me. So if you're listening in and you know me exclusively from bartending, that's weird.
Well, I'm sure you have a big bartending fan base. So
I like to think that.
You're like Tom Cruise from Cocktail.
Yep, except my wife gets mad when I try and do all the bottle flips, all the flair.
Oh, man.
Women. It's a waste of time and energy because you can only really do it if you only have a little bit of liquor in the bottle, because if you have too much, the weight gets thrown off. It's all secrets of the biz.
See, this is shocking. This is welcome back to Bartender Insider.
Yep. Normally when I'm flipping bottles of, what is that, Andorian ale around.
I see what you did.
Yep.
It is one of my favorite Star Trek ales, the other being Romulan ale.
Limited menu.
Yes. So let me ask you first off, would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I guess I'd say I'm I don't know if I'd say fan. I haven't watched that much Star Trek, to be honest with you. I've watched episodes here or there. I watched my mother was a big Next Generation fan.
Uh-huh.
So I definitely watched some with her. My mother was also a really big Quantum Leap fan, that's a weird tie-in with this episode of Enterprise. But this was the first episode, not to get to it too soon, but this was the first episode of Enterprise I ever watched.
Oh, really? Not because of this podcast, but just by happenstance, or because of this podcast?
I watched this episode because of the podcast. I didn't just... But I've never seen any other episodes of Enterprise. Okay. That's what I was trying to say. There's a very good reason why I would have sought out this episode this specific episode. I'm going to get to that later, though.
Ooh.
There's a mystery, a little Easter egg. Not really an Easter egg.
If we're going to tell people, it's not an Easter egg. But
yeah, you're totally right.
You have to sneak it in somehow.
I watched most of the movies, if not all of them.
So you sound like you are a rabid fan of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy it.
Well, of course. Who doesn't enjoy Star Trek? There are lots of people, I'm sure, who don't enjoy Star Trek. Would you say you're more of a Star Wars guy?
Yes, I would say that's probably.
All right.
Yeah.
I understand. I feel like the Star Wars, Star Trek is kind of like the Beatles and Elvis Presley.
I've heard Beatles and Rolling Stones.
Maybe. I don't really like the Rolling Stones, so maybe that's why I didn't think of them. But I like both Elvis Presley and the Beatles, and I like both Star Wars and Star Trek. So in my mind, perhaps that's why it makes sense. Although I like Star Trek more. So.
Okay.
Which is why I'm not hosting a random Star Wars podcast.
Sure. It
would be slightly harder, I think. But
It would be a shorter podcast.
It would be, especially since I would skip the prequels.
Why? They're great.
I know everybody loves them. I just couldn't get into them. So you've seen most of the movies. Which was your favorite Star Trek movie?
I think the Star Trek movie that I've seen the most is Part 6, Undiscovered Country, man.
Ah, yes. That's an excellent one to have seen the most. Although I noticed you didn't say you liked it the most. You've just seen it.
No, I think I probably like it the most. I liked First Contact quite a bit. I think. But I definitely remember seeing Part 4 is The Whales, right? I definitely remember seeing that in the theater, but I don't remember it as much as, like, I watched When I was growing up, my folks, we moved to a bigger house at one point, and it had a satellite dish.
Ooh.
And the satellite dish would get like channels that would show one pay-per-view movie over and over and over. And because we had the satellite dish, we didn't have to pay for those pay-per-view movies. And so there would be like one channel would just show like Terminator 2 over and over and over all day, which is great for a kid. But also Star Trek VI was on one of those channels at one point, and I remember watching it over and over and over. And I'd always get excited when they're in prison and Kirk kicks that alien in the knee and you're like, oh, that's where his genitals are, which is crazy.
That is not a good place to keep your genitals.
It is a terrible place. I hope he doesn't do any manual labor where he has to like kneel down all day.
I hadn't thought about that. Or he's perhaps for some reason Roman Catholic. That would be unfortunate.
Yep. Or if he, I don't know, takes up Thai kickboxing or something.
Yeah, I imagine that that culture has evolved in such a way to avoid kneeling at all costs.
Yeah, their chairs must look different, you know?
That's right. Maybe they do the old Riker way of swinging your leg up over the chair.
Yeah.
And then settling in carefully. All right, well, so Star Trek VI, I accept that. That's a good answer. The right answer is Star Trek II, but that's all right.
That's fair. So wait, Star Trek VI is also the one where the Klingon dude is like, you haven't heard Shakespeare until you've heard it in the original Klingon or whatever. And you're like, that's crazy, dude.
And I have a copy of Hamlet in the original Klingon very near to me.
Awesome.
Because that's the kind of person I am. I do like Star Trek VI, though. I like the scene where they cut the gravity on the ship, and the Klingons are floating around, and then the assassin comes in and shoots the one Klingon, the ambassador, and the blood starts spurting out, and it's like Pepto-Bismol. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I totally remember that. That's great.
Yes, and then Captain Sulu shows up in at a clutch moment and blows some stuff up, so good for him. And I think what Red from that 70s show is like the president of the Federation. So,
yeah, he's come a long way since RoboCop.
That's right. Although I like RoboCop as well.
Well, I mean, but like he went from being like a gangster to president that's of the true. Federation.
He was from a hardscrabble background. That's why the Federation. In the future, you just ignore that. You rehabilitate people and they go on to great careers. So, you know, Kirk was a prisoner as well, and he got out, so.
Yeah. It's a great tale. It's an inspiring tale for former convicts everywhere, I guess.
That's right. So keep reaching for the stars, prisoners. You too may be president of a fictional government body.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's talk about Enterprise a little bit. So this is the first episode of Enterprise you've ever seen.
Yeah, can you give me a little bit of background on Enterprise? I'm sure the listeners at home are like, oh, I know everything about Enterprise, dude.
That's exactly what they sound like.
Yeah, sorry for doing a mean impression of you. But can you give me a quick rundown of Enterprise? I take it it's a prequel to...
It is. So this happens before the original series. This charts the very first Enterprise, well, starship that's named Enterprise, with Captain Archer being the first captain of the Enterprise. And I believe it may be one of the only starships that the humans have. And they are, you know, after first contact, we meet the Vulcans, and the Vulcans... I think this is like 50 years after that or something. I don't know, someone's going to send me an angry letter about that. As X number of years after we first contact, Earth has gotten its stuff together, and now they're off to explore the galaxy with the helpful, kind of helpful hand of the Vulcans. The Vulcans act as kind of helpers, but also tamping humanity's knack for getting into trouble. So the Vulcans know a lot of stuff, but they don't share a lot of information. And in fact, Enterprise kind of paints the Vulcans in not a very good light in many episodes. This episode in particular...
Is this where they kind of establish the idea that that Vulcans often serve as what, like science officers or?
Yeah, so she is, T'Pol, who is the Vulcan on this series, is the second in command. She's kind of an observer from the Vulcan high command to make sure that Captain Archer doesn't do anything stupid. And she has, in the episode we watched today, which is, what is it called? Proving Ground, which is from season 3, episode 13, which is a perfect entry point into Enterprise because it happens right in the middle of a 7-episode arc, which also highlights a problem with the concept of this podcast as we get into later series of Star Trek before
I was able to figure things out, I think.
It's but not too that complicated. Makes sense.
So she, one thing I noticed about her is that velvet jumpsuit uniform she has.
It's hard not to notice that.
It's very velvety. It's super, I don't know. It's great. Two thumbs up.
You want it to be nice and comfortable on the ship. A little cozy. It kind of looks like pajamas, perhaps.
But it certainly stands out from everyone else's uniforms.
Their little jumpsuits. And that's the thing. One of the challenges with Enterprise, I think, and for many people, Enterprise, myself included, is their least favorite Star Trek series, is that, it was set before the original series, but it was made many years after the original series. So it looks much better. And the ship looks much better, and everything looks much more complicated. So they had to figure out a way to kind of make it believable. I don't know if they did that or not, but that explains the jumpsuits, at least. It's kind of the military aspect of the outfits, so they don't have the good old blouses from the original series.
Yeah, that makes sense. So this is in the middle of – it felt like it was in the middle of a large arc.
Yes. So the things – and I didn't realize – well, this is, the whims of the random Trek number generator. Is that, we can't – I can't tell it what to do. It is random. And so it will pick what it wants to pick. And so it picked in the third – perhaps the second season final ending or the opening of the third season, there's this race of folks called the Zindi, which is actually – they have 6 different subspecies, I believe. And they, for some reason, decide that they don't like humans. And that they want to destroy.
I certainly gathered that from what I saw. Luckily, so I watched this on Amazon because I have Amazon Prime. I'm showing off a little bit.
Fancy.
Yep. And so there was a previously on, which felt like I got a little bit of I got a little bit caught up to speed, but there was certainly not enough information there for somebody who was not a regular watcher of Enterprise to know what was going on. Although, so there was a lot of scenes of these Zindi fellows, which is a race or like a evil group of people. I didn't quite get that part.
Yes. It could seem like it's just an evil cabal of people, but it is a race. They're all the same race. They all, I was going to say grew up, but evolved on the same planet and possibly grew up on the same planet. I don't know where they lived. And they are – I was looking at Memory Alpha, which is my source of all things Star Trek, and it tells me that the different species of Zindi are only like 3% different genetically. I don't know how they know that, but they do.
So all those dudes hanging out in that room, those guys are all Zindi. Okay. Even though there's like the really cool-looking green dudes with the porcupine spikes on their head.
Mm-hmm.
And the dudes that are in the water dudes.
The aquatic Zindi, as they are called.
Okay, they're also Zindi. Okay.
They are.
And then there's the kind that are like, they look like they could show up in among humans and not look too weird.
Yes, those are
also Zindi. Are they like hill Zindi?
Yeah, they're the not too weird looking Zindi, I believe is their official.
That's their technical name. Yes. Okay, so those guys, those are the baddies.
I believe they are the Arboreals.
Okay, and they're developing some kind of a super weapon that they're going to use against the humans.
Yes, so they had a super weapon that they did use. Oh, actually, before someone writes in and tells me, the Zindi primate is the one that almost looks like a human.
Okay.
The Arboreals are the ones that kind of look like the apes from Planet of the Apes. They at the beginning of the arc, they develop this weapon that shoots a giant beam and goes, I believe it goes across Florida and kills millions of people, because, you shouldn't be living in Florida, just in general. And so people are bummed out. It's a big, devastating thing. The Vulcans don't want any the humans to react. They want to, you know, take their time. And that's why T'Pol has resigned her commission, because she wants to stay on the ship and help Archer and her crewmates figure out what happened and get their revenge against the Zindi.
How non-Vulcan of her.
Exactly. She is being a little emotional, I think, and not so logical. And so they guess in this episode, in previous episodes, they had met another Zindi who was developing the weapon, and he put some kind of special tracking thing on the prototype so they could find it. And they are going through this section of space called the Delphonic Expanse.
That sounds cool.
Or the Delphic, not Delphonic. I made it sound cooler, but it's just the Delphic Expanse.
Yeah, not as cool. You ruined it.
I'm sorry.
With the real name, I guess.
I did. The writers ruined it. I made it awesome. I ruined it with being correct. And so I guess in this episode, we find out in this expanse, there are these weird disturbances that you have to, you know, fly around and make sure that you don't get your ship all blown up.
So at the very beginning of the episode, they are in the Delphic Expanse, and they go through an anomaly field?
They do.
Okay, so what is that?
That is an anomaly field.
Okay, cool.
I believe it's like, if you're familiar with Star Trek Insurrection, that is taking place in the Briar Patch, which is an area of space where it is difficult to navigate. And I believe this is a very similar idea. They have these randomly occurring anomalies that make it difficult to scoot your ship around. And the Enterprise is not as high tech as other ships. So they don't have as advanced sensors. They don't, you know, the Vulcans share a little bit of information, but not a lot of information. And the Enterprise doesn't have like shields. It has armor hull plating. They don't have a tractor beam. They have a little, literally like a grabber on a rope that they shoot at things.
Cool.
Which is kind of sad, but
so we are finally getting to the very beginning of the episode.
Exactly.
Okay.
This is everything
I'm
you need to know.
Forcing you to spend all this time catching me up.
This is what you need to know to enjoy this episode of Enterprise.
Sure.
And in which we find the Andorians show up again. And they're probably my favorite part of this episode.
I got the feeling that the Andorians were reoccurring characters. I didn't really remember them from previous Star Trek things that I'd watched.
Yeah, they're a race. They're a race that I believe was introduced in the original series, but they didn't really do much with them. And I feel like, and I could be wrong here, I don't want to speak for the writers of Enterprise, but they were looking for a familiar yet underutilized race to use for there. So they didn't want Klingons or Romulans.
Cardassians.
Right. And so the Romulans, obviously, in Star Trek timeline, we haven't met the Romulans yet, so that happens in the original series. Although there is an episode where they meet the Romulans, which caused a lot of nerd rage in Enterprise. So I think they just settled on having the Andorians. Which is good, because now that special effects are at the time they filmed this, not now, are better, so that the little antenna can actually move around independently, which they could not do in the original series.
And that's why it's when the Andorians showed up that I felt like this episode had been picked out specifically for me, because any listener of the Flophouse podcast will know I am a huge fan of the actor Jeffrey Combs.
Oh.
I have recommended on the podcast, in addition to making jokes about movies, we also recommend them. And I have famously recommended a movie starring Jeffrey Combs called Castle Freak like 7 times or something. I'd have to check the wiki. But also, obviously, Jeffrey Combs' other work like Reanimator, Dolls, et cetera, the list goes on. Everything that Jeffrey Combs is in, he's great.
Wayoon from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, exactly. So in Deep Space Nine, he played a different alien guy, right?
He did. He played a similar kind of sinister alien guy.
And he is so much fun in this episode.
He is the best thing in this episode, frankly. not because of his Castle Freak pedigree, but maybe that helps. I don't know. I've never seen Castle Freak. I've heard you recommend it many times, but that has not made me go out to seek it.
Well, maybe after this. This is a last-ditch effort for me to reach you.
Maybe. And actually, I didn't realize that I didn't make the connection that that Jeffrey Combs that you were, Combs you were talking about was this one.
It is so. The exact same Jeffrey Combs.
What?
He is great. What a great actor.
He is a great actor.
And that he manages to share something that like the Ron Perlmans of the world have, which is you can cover him in latex or face paint, and he is still great. And he can play visibly, like he can play very different characters. In yes. this case, a like having no, I get the feeling like Shran, his character, has shown up in the show before.
Yes.
And he's kind of like, I got the feeling like he's kind of a bad guy, but you also kind of like, you kind of like him a little bit because he's kind of a rogue.
That's right. He's a lovable rogue. He's Captain Archer's frenemy, I think.
Okay.
I don't think they have a bromance, but they're getting there.
I don't know. Enough Andorian ale. Anybody does anything.
It's true. You don't ask what happens in Andoria stays on Andoria.
Yeah, just do what your body wants.
That's right. Give in to yourself. and I did. I will admit, though, this episode, whenever there are so many Andorians in Enterprise, the moving of their antenna tends to distract me.
Yep. That's fair.
They move a lot. Mm-hmm. But that's not, you know, that's not, that may be racist against a fake race of aliens. But I feel like in this episode in particular, there was a lot of pointed antenna movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can draft an apology later to the Andorians, but why don't we just move forward with the plot of this episode?
All right. Well, at the rate we're going, we're not going to be done in our time limit.
Okay. So we have a bunch of Andorians show up. And this is kind of like, this is a complicated episode, right?
It is a complicated episode because, so they're looking for this weapon. They're trying to go through, and we know, the viewer knows, that the Andorians are looking for the Enterprise and kind of has been following them for a while. The Enterprise doesn't know that because of their poor sensors and all that good stuff. And so the Enterprise thinks that they have mapped out the anomaly field, although they base it on like having 3% of the data, which seems like not a great idea. And it turns out it isn't a great idea. They go right into an anomaly. They nearly die. But the Andorian ship appears and uses their fancy tractor beam, pulls them out. Everybody's safe. But oh no, the Enterprise is totally messed up.
Yeah, out of the frying pan, you know?
Yes, into the Andorian fryer. or fire. or fire, whatever works for you. And so, and then the Andorians, they hail good old Captain Archer, and we get probably what is the best shot in this entire episode, which is from behind, we see Captain Archer's head. And he's standing in front of the view screen, and the Andorian antennas are coming. Look as though they're coming out of Captain Archer's head. And I laughed and laughed.
Because for a regular viewer, they would be like, uh-oh.
That's right. We know those antenna. Antennae.
So they form an unlikely alliance.
They do. And Shran says, hey, we're going to help you fix your ship. And everybody is not thrilled with this idea. Because they don't want Andorians crawling around, seeing their secrets.
But part of it is, so this is where things get really interesting, at least for me, is they bring along, Shran comes over to the ship and he brings along Lieutenant Talos.
Yes.
Who is meant to help Lieutenant Reed repair like the weapon systems and stuff like that. Am I correct at this point?
You are correct.
Okay. And I sensed a little bit of romance there between Talos and Reed. Now,
Icy hot.
So they, over the course of the episode, they have a little bit of playful banter. But you got to tell me later on. Is there a hookup? Is this? Is Reed Alice or Talid? I'm trying to think of their celebrity couple name.
Oh, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, what's is there romance in the future for these two, or am I just hopeless?
I think they're just star-crossed lovers. Their romance does not blossom.
Oh, that's too bad.
Although, according to Memory Alpha, she does have a romance with Shran. So,
that's boring.
But they were always meant to be.
I guess that makes sense. Okay, so.
Yeah, so he doesn't trust her. Reed doesn't trust her. But then she does some stuff, and then he's like, okay, I trust you. You totally helped me. But then, oh, wait for it. He shouldn't have trusted her. But we'll get to that. That happens at the end. And so, yeah, this is where we find out, you know, everyone's like, why are the Andorians being so helpful? The Andorians are going to fix their warp drives fast and give them this piece of technology that they don't have access to. And it turns out that, you know, Captain Tran goes back to his ship and has a very staticky phone call with a general. And I'm not quite sure why it was so staticky, but where we find out that all is not as it seems and that Tran is being
duplicitous.
Yeah, he's being duplicitous. He's against his better judgment, though, because he does say, do we think it's wise to make enemies of the humans? And the general at the back on Andoria, I assume, is like, I don't pay you to think. Do what I tell you. And he hangs up.
Yeah, because he's not being subjected to the constant charm bubble of Scott Bakula.
Now let's talk about Scott Bakula's charm bubble.
Okay.
Because while I think I've had this conversation with everyone that I've spoken to about Enterprise, so the listeners may be sick of it, but I do think Scott Bakula as an actor, very charming. You know, you mentioned Quantum Leap. He's fantastic at Quantum Leap. You did not mention Murphy Brown, but also he's fantastic at Murphy Brown. I don't think that Captain Archer is all that charming.
No, I think you're right. He's especially considering how, like, the company that he's in, right? Like, you got your Picards, you got your you got your Janeways.
Of course. Your Siscos.
You got your Sulus. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about, like, we're talking about powerhouses of charm and charisma. And he's kind of bland, right?
He is a little bland and a little shouty.
And especially in where he's in scenes with Jeffrey Combs, who is like, oh man, like, I just, and it's not just because of the little antenna. Like, I can't take my eyes off that blue-skinned dude.
He is quite the scene stealer. And Captain Archer, I think, is one of the main problems with Enterprise. Because he's not all that interesting. He is a man whose favorite sport is water polo. And that is the truth. That is canon. I don't understand why they made that pick, but he loves him some water polo. He does have a very cute dog, which is not shown on this episode.
So yeah, that doesn't help me at all.
Nope, sorry.
So they, the two of them team up. Their two ships team up to go steal
an unlikely alliance. They figure out where the Zindi are going to test their weapon in some sort of proving ground.
Like the Bikini Atoll.
Exactly. Which is also just a weird scene in which Captain Archer is like, oh, it's like the Bikini Atoll. And he says this to two aliens. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about?
Maybe if he'd said it in the original Bikini Atoll Klingon.
They probably would not have gotten it. And I did think that up until this part, Tran has seemed to be pretty smart. But he has no idea why they would be trying to blow up stuff. As if he could not think that maybe they're testing it out. It seemed pretty obvious to me.
Yep.
But he was like, what? And Archer, his mind was blown.
Yeah. Too much Andorian ale that night, I'm sure.
That's true. And so they're like, oh, let's blow this thing up so that they can't use it. Captain Archer says, wait a second. Maybe we should capture it so we can study it and build a defense for it. And Shran is all like, well, that sounds pretty good, but your ship can't do it because the radiation it's pumping out is too much radiation. Everyone will die. But my ship has far superior shielding, and so we can scoop it up and give it to you.
That sounds like a good idea. They're teammates at this point, right?
Exactly. Everybody is totally on board with the team, although Captain Archer says, okay, I'm on board with that plan as long as basically you make me the captain of your ship, and I will go to your ship, and I'll order everyone around.
Yeah.
And Tran is like, that doesn't sound like a great idea. But he does it anyway after like a 30-second scene where Archer is yelling at him. And it's like, okay, let's do it. So they do it. Spoiler alert, they capture the weapon. They put it in the little hold.
Yep. Spoiler away.
That's right. We even skipped over, they did a little test run where all the Zindi were in a chamber watching from far away. And it didn't work out exactly as they wanted, but it still blew a moon in half. They weren't happy with that because it was supposed to destroy the moon, and half a moon is too much, apparently.
Yeah, somebody who is coming fresh into this storyline, that seemed like a weird a weird complaint.
That's right. You only cracked that moon in half. It was supposed to be destroyed. That feels like a destroyed moon is a moon that has been cracked in half, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, even the smallest amount of damage to a moon will upset the planets, the various effects of the tides on the planet that's surrounding it.
It'll throw off the tides by like 10 seconds.
I've read Akira. I know what happens when you do even the smallest amount of damage to a moon. So yeah,
exactly, Zindy. Read a book. Watch yeah, watch a Japanese yeah, animation movie.
Yeah, read some manga.
What's wrong with you? I guess except for the one, the aquatic one, because it would get all wet.
Yeah, that's their only excuse.
The only excuse for not reading manga is that they
are
submerged.
Give me that reading, having to read it backwards. That's BS.
Zindi is a very complicated language. I feel like they could pick up Japanese easily.
Yeah.
But so yeah, and the other my other problem with this episode is they have this massive weapon that blows up. Well, it doesn't blow up, but cracks a moon in half. Let's be technically correct. And they have ships that are guarding it because this is like their secret proving ground. And yet, one Andorian ship and a lame human ship can charge in, steal the weapon, and go away.
And peace out, no damage.
Exactly. It seems a little
And the weapon is basically, it's the basically the opening thing from the Game of Thrones TV show, right?
That's right.
Okay.
You can see Winterfell in it. You can see the wall. It is just a big...
Like a ball that's like shifting over. Yeah, yeah. A ball of rings.
It's a ball of rings that shoots out a laser.
Somebody calls Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's right.
He was the original ball of rings.
Exactly. And Sonic is blue. Maybe he's an Andorian.
Yeah.
He doesn't have an antenna, though. And he's a hedgehog. So I think that undermines my theory.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, Shran picks it up. And then Captain Archer's like, great, let's rendezvous with the Enterprise. And Shran's like, well, about that. We are not doing that. We're keeping the weapon because we want to.
Yeah, and tough luck, pink skins.
That's right. Ooh, I do enjoy when they call them pink skins. And then Archer gets very upset.
Mm-hmm.
And in another I don't understand scene, he punches Shran with like all the Andorians on the bridge just standing around, not stopping him in any way. It seems weird.
Or really reacting much at all. They're not even like, uh-oh, Shran is going to kill this dude.
But he doesn't. Shran's like, put him in an escape pod and tell the Enterprise where we left him.
Yeah, and so is them the Andorians having blue blood, is that an intentional reference to the idea that they're like landed gentry, that they're nobility?
Yes, of course. I think that's what I believe it's because they have blue skin.
Okay, I guess that makes more sense. Yeah, the transition from let's stick him in an escape pod and tell him where he's at to the next scene immediately, Archer just walking around on the Enterprise was kind of a weird transition for me.
They picked him up. It was fine. You don't need to see that part.
Yeah, I guess that's the boring stuff.
Exactly. And that's where, he's like, well, the Enterprise, before he gets stuffed into the escape pod, he's like, well, the Enterprise will just find you. You have no chance of outrunning us. And that's when Tran says, ha ha, we sabotaged your sensors as well. And so then we cut to Archer's back on the bridge and he's like, did you fix the sensors? And they're like, yep, we were watching them like a hawk.
this is the part of the episode that I didn't really quite wrap my head around. At this point, they do like a little bit of a showdown.
Mm-hmm.
So the Enterprise is following Shran's ship, the Kumari. And
nice pronunciation.
Yep. Thank you. I've been practicing my Andorian.
Very good.
And so the humans wanted the prototype of the weapon so that they could take it back and study it.
Right.
But the Andorians have it and they're going to peace out with it. So Archer is like, I'm just going to blow it up inside your hold.
Yeah, because if you can't have it, nobody can have
it. Yeah, but how does he get the power to have the thing self-destruct?
I think there is like a quick line where they say that somehow they had intercepted command signals from the ship that was, you know, commanding the prototype. And so they had the codes to start it up.
Okay.
So they transmitted those codes. And that's why the Andorians couldn't turn it off.
Yeah, okay. I lost that part. I missed that part.
Well, that was like 2 seconds to explain why. So they could have this super tense standoff.
Yep.
Where Shran is like, I don't believe you. And Archer's like, well, you don't have to believe me, but you're going to die.
Yep. And then people from the storage area are like, yeah, it's about to explode. We better throw it out.
And they're like, okay, let's throw it out. They throw it out into space. At which point you think, well, maybe the Enterprise should just turn it off so that they can collect it. But they don't, and it blows up. and it hurts. It hurts. It damages the ship, the Andorian ship, which is whose name I'm not even going to try to pronounce. And the Enterprise, although the Andorians were closer, so the Enterprise offers some help, which the Andorians decline.
Yeah.
And then they're going to leave.
Yeah, the good guys, our humans, celebrate with some Andorian ale.
Yay! But before they leave, they get an encoded message hidden as some subspace static or something.
Yeah.
And in that message, the blueprints for the Andorian, not the Andorian, the Zindi superweapon.
Uh-huh.
So that they can take it home and transmit it to the Federation. And
we don't technically know who sent those.
Right. But I think that it is clear that it was Shran who sent them.
Yeah.
Because he has kind of a little crush on Archer, I think.
Understandably. He yells a lot.
that is very attractive. And Scott Bakula is a handsome man, so I can understand that. Although he's a pink skin, so I wonder if that would be even attractive to Andorians, but what do I know?
Maybe it's forbidden fruit. I mean, you never know.
That's true. He certainly does not like T'Pol, so he's not into Vulcans. And that's the episode. It ends with them going off and, you know, doing whatever it is happens in the next episode.
Yeah, question mark.
Yes.
The future's unwritten, like that's they say right. in Terminator 2. Or Terminator, I guess.
So Stuart, I'm interested because this is probably if someone said to me, Scott, I'd like to get into Enterprise, give me the best first episode to watch, I would not give them this episode.
Sure.
So how did you feel about this as your entrance into the world of Enterprise?
The biggest thing I would take away from it is that the most exciting characters were Jeffrey Combs as Shran, and even the other Andorians, and then the Zindi at least looked pretty weird, but the crew were kind of boring. Like, it was there wasn't a lot of diversity, at least that what I saw in the crew. It seemed like a lot of white guys hanging out. And I didn't get enough. I didn't really get a lot of the character details from characters like Reed or Archer or who was the other dude? Was there a dude that
Tucker?
Tucker was that the one who had had a previous? They alluded to a previous romantic entanglement with T'Pol.
Yes.
Yeah, but none of them. I didn't get very much of any of their personalities from this episode.
No, this is not a character study episode. This is, I'm not quite even sure how it would characterize this episode, because it's also not that exciting. Although a moon does get cracked in half, that's kind of
yeah, if that's not exciting, I don't know what is.
I'm very jaded.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, there was, at least for me, it was cool to get to see an actor that I love getting an opportunity to chew some scenery.
And so who knew that the random Trek gods knew you so well and picked this episode?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It is the power of Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah.
So my final question for you is, has this inspired you to seek out more Enterprise to watch?
You know what? I probably would go back to the first season. I got a buddy who's a big Star Trek fan, and he's definitely recommended episodes of Enterprise that I should watch, and I keep forgetting to watch them. he said there was like a pair of episodes that were really great, and it might be worthwhile to watch them in advance, and I totally forgot what he said, so I should probably ask him again.
I bet they are the episodes that happen in the Mirror Universe.
That's quite possible.
That would be my guess.
And is that in season one or two or three or four?
I believe that might be in the fourth season.
Okay.
But I could be wrong because I'm not good at remembering these details.
Sure. I'm sure somebody will write in an email.
Yes. In a Mirror Darkly, it's called, and it's fourth season.
Okay, cool.
That's the first part. I would suggest watch those two. They're fun. And that is, it gives Scott Bakula a chance to have a fun time because he plays his evil counterpart to Archer, who actually has a personality and is a little bit fun, as opposed to the bland, good Archer that we have.
Yeah, do you feel like it was a case where they were, like, were they just trying to make, like, a patently good, like, a bunch of good guys boring crew? Or, I mean, I don't think they were intentionally making them boring, but they were trying to make them all, like, cool good guys.
The main problem with this is that these characters are too exciting. If we could just ratchet that down a bit.
Yeah.
I think what they were trying to go for is that, you know, this is humankind. I was trying to think of the right way of saying that now. Mm-hmm. Humankind's first entrance into the interstellar community. And so they pick this rock solid kind of military officer who's no nonsense to be at the helm. So they wanted someone like that. But he just, they told him, they said, "Hey, Scott Bakula, we're hiring you because you're super charming, but don't be charming at all." And he was like, "Okay, it's a paycheck."
Which seems like a huge mistake. But it's, maybe, I mean, I've only seen one episode, so I shouldn't be so harsh a critic.
No, you are correct. You're not being harsh. You're just being real, Stuart. You're okay. Keeping it real.
Yep.
Well, Stuart, thank you so much for joining me on Random Track.
Oh, no worries. Thanks for having me, Scott.